In an ever-changing world, Off Hollywood Media presents a voice of truth and inspiration, resonating a vibration of love and understanding, illuminating new paths for new directions, as we, as one, strive for higher and higher levels of consciousness, always remembering life changes. And now, your host, our MC, our master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Ciao, everyone. I like that introduction, actually. Thank you so much, Mark Lejeune. I am excited about this show because so many different jobs are starting. People are finding different things to do in society and for society. And today we have, I should have asked him 12 times more how to say his last name. Samuel is his first name, and he was just here. I want to say Kiwash. It's Kiwash, but I think it's Kiwash, and I like to say people's names exactly right. But in any event, he is a community synergist. And so I'm looking forward to having that discussion as to what that is and why this job is important in this, particularly at this time. So speaking of things and jobs that are important, particularly at this time, and conversations that are important at this time, you know, it's interesting. I had a not so happy conversation with a dear, dear, dear friend of mine about 2 years ago. And he told me that his son-in-law had an appendicitis. And so I was really listening to what he had to say and what his friend was, what his son-in-law was going through. And I really felt for him. And it sounded horrible. He was in pain a lot. And he knew he had to go to the doctors. And he went. And the doctor said, we have to cut it out, do surgery, et cetera. And he said, but right now I'm in the middle of my work, blah, blah, blah. But as soon as I get done this week or whatever, I'll come in. And they scheduled something like a week in advance. And I said to my friend, you know, and I had done some research, and I'm not a doctor, and I wasn't telling him what to do, but I made some suggestions. I said, you know, supposedly an appendicitis is waste products that are accumulating in the caecum or whatever it's called. I was looking this up, and I remember writing it down, and I brought my notes, and that causes infections and whatever. But it's supposedly an impacted intestine could inflammate that, or obviously if there's waste product in that area, it needs to come out. And so I said, you know, there are some herbs that your son-in-law can take in the meantime before he goes to the doctor, and he could be drinking some juices like beet juice and cucumber juice, carrot juice and all that stuff. And, you know, it would be great, actually, if he did a cleanse during this time and if he maybe went and got a colonic. And I mean, he stopped me right there and he says, Filippo, that's too radical. And I thought, first of all, I wasn't telling him not to go have the surgery. But even if, and I thought that even if he had done this stuff, his pain probably would have gone away. And maybe even his appendicitis is what I was reading. And so he might not have had to have the surgery. Of course, that could all be x-rayed and, you know, make sure that it's all true and all that. But I said, you know, if he did this for a week up until his surgery and then the appendicitis is gone, Filippo, that's too radical. You're so radical, you don't even realize what you're saying, how weird it is. And I thought, how weird it is. First of all, colonics were done in my grandparents' days. My parents used to talk about it, and they used to do them until they discovered that there was the new way of doing things. And so, the new way of doing things. What did his son-in-law end up doing? His son-in-law ended up going to a hospital where somebody put him to sleep completely, which is dangerous. Think about it. Someone knocks you out. And then they took a knife to him, or a laser, whatever it is nowadays, and cut his body, cut through his skin, the layers of skin, and cut all of that, and then took out a piece that was inside his body and had to, you know, sew it up with laser or, you know, clog it up somehow, whatever, and then stitch it up or whatever they do now, staple it. I don't even know. But, and then he was in the hospital for about a week, medications, feeling horrible, and then he was off work at home in pain for another week. And that's not radical. No, that's not radical. What have we come to? So it was interesting that a few months later, this friend of mine, who's an elderly gentleman, the doctors told him that he had cancer. And the interesting thing about the medical system here, that what he had medical insurance-wise or whatever, they couldn't schedule him for a month and then 2 months, then ended up being 3 or 4 months. So all this time, they told him he was going to die, and they needed to do something right away, but they couldn't schedule him, plus they weren't sure what they were going to do yet. What could they not be sure of? They ended up with radiation and chemotherapy. Whoa, that's new, that's different. I mean, that's what they've been prescribing for so many people for so long. How come they didn't know that that's what they were going to do for him? And why did it take 4 or 5 months, however long it took? But I said to this friend, you know, in reading about cancer, there are so many websites and so many books that say it has to do with your body being too acidic. I mean, spiritual people and woo-woo people will say it has to do with your emotions. So all of these things that I had been reading and I'd been learning, and I couldn't wait to share with him. And I said, you know, during this time that you're waiting for the doctors to decide when they could see you and when they could do something, you could be drinking alkaline water to make your body more alkaline. You could be drinking baking soda, which supposedly helps your body become more alkaline. Again, I'm not a doctor, and I didn't tell him not to go to the doctor. I was telling him, do this in the meantime. Do a cleanse. You know, worst case, he loses weight. I mean, I don't know. You know, do fruit juices. I mean, vegetable juices and all these things that I was trying to tell him, and he stopped me again. He said, Filippo, again, you're too radical. And I just wonder if you would have exercised and rested and stayed away from coffee and white flour and all the things that these websites were saying. When he went to the doctor 5 months later, what the doctor would have said? Oh, we made a mistake. We must have gotten the wrong chart. You don't have cancer. But instead he had cancer, and it was a lot worse now after 5 months, especially with him thinking on, you know, my God, I got cancer, I'm going to die. I have to get in there, and they can't see me yet. And that was his mantra. So he stopped working. He was useless to his family. He went under the doctor care and lost his hair, lost his life, didn't die, but for a year and a half, might as well have. Because his family watched him go through this trauma, which is not radical, by the way. Drinking vegetable juice, that's radical. Taking some rest and not drinking coffee, that's radical. But the funny thing is that he couldn't eat or drink anything, so they had to give him juice. I don't remember if it was through a whole year, where his hole was, whatever. They had to give him juice that way and whatever. It's like, oh, that way taking juice is okay. But putting vegetables in a blender and blending or a juicer and drinking them this way, that's radical. You know, I could go on and on about this. Truth of the matter is that I have friends that are trying to tell me things about how society is changing. And they're talking about things that could be 50 years down the line, 20 years down the line. And they're asking me to change and look at things differently. And I'm thinking some of these things are radical. But it's a good time for me to have this example of how we get stuck in our ways, and we look at things that are new or modern or radical and say, that's not for me, I'm going to go with what's tried and true. Interestingly enough, this modern stuff of the medicine is not really tried and true. It's not really that true, and it's been tried. And unfortunately, more people die from that. Again, I don't have the statistics, but anyway, I won't get into that. But you know, I think you get my point, is that what are we really looking at and what's really radical? So right now is a time for us to be looking at what changes are coming up and maybe how do we take in those changes. And our guest today is talking about changes that are pretty radical when you come to think of it. But the funny thing is, as I started to explore just how radical they are, I started thinking, wait a minute, my grandparents used to do this. My uncle used to do this. And in modernism, we threw that stuff out because it was old. And I've done that so many times myself. So I am happy to say that it's time to look at a new way of doing things, and I'm going to be looking at it myself. So I want to remind everybody that you're watching on YouTube and listening to Life Changes with Filippo, and you can find us at www.lifechanges.ws. And we're here every Monday night on the BBS Radio Network, and we're happy that you've joined us. And joining us today is Samuel Kivash. I knew it. I knew there was a V, even though it's a W. I knew it sounded like a V. So Samuel Kivash, and he's an author. He's a Reiki master. He's a teacher. But why we really couldn't wait to have him on the show is because he's a community synergist. So we want to make sure we really understand why that's important and what that is all about. So he'll be speaking about the importance of creating an expanded global community of conscious individuals. He also speaks about us choosing to be catalysts for human transformation, and he uses examples from his life, which are pretty powerful, actually. And you will come to get, after hearing what he has to say, I'm quite sure, a desire to use your hearts, your homes, the web, and other resources that we haven't even discovered yet as divine instruments in the awakening of humanity to the joyful oneness of creation. His words, but I'm getting the feeling like that's going to happen, and I can't wait to let it happen with Samuel Kivash.
Thank you.
Great to have you here on the show.
Nice to be here.
And I, you know, it's so funny because community synergist, I mean, what the heck? What's that?
It's somebody who goes out into the world and looks for opportunities to bring people together. I think of myself as a bridge builder.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing this for many, many years. And I meet people from all walks of life. And when I meet someone, my inclination is, how can I lift this person up to the next level of their awareness, of their consciousness? And I automatically go into this mode of thinking, who do I know that can help this person? And it's just, I've been doing this so long that it's just an automatic thing.
You know, that's interesting because your heritage is Jewish, right?
Right.
And especially in the Jewish culture, there is a matchmaker for marriages. And that was such an important job, such an important person in the community. And all of a sudden here, what an amazing way to bring those natural skills, maybe, or that culture into a whole new realm of doing things.
Yes. Yes, I guess it's in my blood.
It's in your blood. Okay, so people are looking for what? Ways to spread their message, or communities where their message is accepted, obviously, but what else?
Well, everybody's at a different level of development. So different things work for different people at different times. And I look for, what does this person need? What can make them enlivened? What can excite their spirit? What can motivate them to go to the next level?
You know, we're going to talk about so much, but you just said something there. Why is that important for that one person to be enlivened? Why should we care that one person is enlivened?
Well, it's important because we are infinitely powerful. We are part of the divine intelligence. And each individual, as they wake up and become conscious of their full potential, has a tremendous impact on not only their home, their family, their community. They actually impact the universe.
Every single person.
Yes. And as you wake up, as you do whatever it takes to turn on the light within you, it's almost like you don't have to say a word. You just go out into the community, you're in that state, and you create a field. And anybody that comes into that field will automatically be lifted up. Of course, it doesn't just come by itself. I believe you have to do the work.
There's work, and you know, there also is the communities in which we live in, because you're in Los Angeles, probably, I would think, one of the hardest places to do this, because people in Los Angeles, and I'm overgeneralizing, but we hear this a lot, they don't say hi to their neighbors, much less, or they don't even know them, you know? So how are we building community, how are you building community in Los Angeles?
You have to find your tribe. I'm not going to be effective with everyone I meet. You have to find people that share your values, your ethics, your beliefs, people who get excited about the same things you do, and that's where you put your energy.
Mm.
And if we all found people of like mind, we could build together. And it's like our tribe, our community, whatever it is we're working on, can add to the contribution of the whole potential heaven on earth. We're trying to bring heaven on earth. I think we're in the trouble we're in because we have done the opposite. We have tried to bring earth up to heaven.
Mm.
And it doesn't work that way.
Mm.
So by doing our specific part, by playing the role, I believe before we're born we make a contract with the divine intelligence spirit of what we need to learn in this life. And the closer we move in alignment with that contract, the more joy we'll have, the more peace we'll have, the more effective we'll be, and the more we'll accomplish our life's purpose. And when you're in alignment with your life's purpose, the joy, the happiness, the peace of mind, it will come automatically.
You know, this is exciting for me because I'm from an Italian-American heritage, so
we're almost the same.
Exactly, the cultures. There are a lot of jokes we could say about how the same we are. But growing up in that community, the older generation, the old people used to go to clubs, the club. They used to get together and talk about things that were important for them, to them. And the younger generations, we thought, oh, that's crazy, because we were trying to be part of the modern world. And they were still talking about back in the old countries, right? So they had a commonality there. Well, all of a sudden, we've all left the groups and the communities, and now we're all hanging out there on our own looking for a group and community. What I think is brilliant about what you're doing is that you're bringing like minds together for a purpose.
Yes, and it was not always that easy. In the early 70s, when I first discovered, I was raised an atheist. My parents were Holocaust survivors, and I never even met the old people, the grandparents.
Mm.
They were killed in the war when the Nazis came and killed the Jews in Europe. And not all of them, obviously, but a lot of them. And so I was deprived of a lot of that older heritage. And like I said, I was raised an atheist. I was also raised on natural foods. I was raised mostly on raw foods.
Crazy.
My mother came here.
Radical.
In the 50s. My mother, she's in heaven now, or wherever they go when they leave here. Sylvia.
She's God right here. God
there you go.
Her.
Hello, Sylvia. Her nutrition was not that good during the war. I mean, it was hard to find food.
Mm.
And she came here and she says, there's got to be a way. There's got to be a way to get healthy. And she, in her desire, in her sincere desire, she discovered natural hygiene. American Natural Hygiene Society, Dr. Herbert M. Shelton, he wrote a book called Fasting Can Save Your Life.
Oh.
And you've heard of evangelical Christians.
About that.
She was an evangelical natural hygienist.
Okay.
And she wanted to raise my younger brother, myself, and my older sister on mostly raw fruits, vegetables, and nuts. It was really radical. They didn't even believe in vitamins because they felt that was too much of a stimulant. So she spent the money we had on good food, and we had the best food, but we were forced to eat this way.
Mm.
And whenever someone's forced to do something one way, there's a rebellion.
Right.
So in the 50s, my younger brother and I would go to elementary school. We were the only one with fruits and nuts. So we had to trade our nuts for sandwiches so we could have some of the other foods. Anyways, I grew up in the holistic movement.
So the pendulum had swung, and that's not necessarily helpful, but go on.
And I was raised an atheist. My parents felt that religion has done more. Man has created religion, and religion has done more to destroy and kill people than anything we've ever created.
Wow.
And it wasn't until I transferred to UCLA in my junior year that I discovered an experimental college, and they had all kinds of classes open to anyone in the community. Anybody could teach a class, anybody could take a class, wow. And it was free. And I discovered yoga, tai chi, meditation, and I went, oh my God, wow.
Well, but that's not a religion, right? None of that's religion.
Yeah, but it's all connected to the new paradigm.
Right.
All connected to the cultural, mind, body, spirit, culture, creative movement.
Right.
And it's the only thing that made any sense to me. And I turned upside down and I became a believer in the divine intelligence, the infinite intelligence, the perfection, the synchronicity of the creation.
Yeah, I'm looking at you and all this passion that you have. And were you the one that created this community synergist word and this job?
No, no.
Really? This is...
My friend, oh my God, how can I blank on his name? I have an older friend. He's a sacred geometry master. And he's the one that gave me two terms. He said, social alchemist, community synergist. So I added conscious community synergist because I'm all about consciousness. How can we live a more conscious life? How can we make a contribution? How can we uplift people? How can we stay centered in the present, find peace of mind, and do our divine service? And live a happy, contented life by doing our purpose.
Now, Samuel, being out there in various communities myself, I see you at most of the events. And the funny thing is you're always a happy guy. So
not always. Nobody's always happy.
Well, I've only seen you that way. But okay. Sometimes I see a lot of people, and I don't always see them in the same happy spirit. So
I'm glad you're mentioning that, because my mother used to worry about money a lot.
Okay.
And I spent a lot of time with her, and I had a lot of her thinking, as happens when you spend a lot of time with someone. And when I left the family home when I was 22, I thought, there's got to be a better way. And so I made a conscious decision to immerse myself with spiritual teachers and positive thinkers that could shift my way of being. And I liked Abraham Maslow. He taught about self-actualized people. Mm-hmm. He said 2% of the population has the potential to be self-actualized. Well, Wayne Dyer wrote Your Erroneous Zones. And when I read that, he said, he was a student of Abraham Maslow. He said, we can all become self-actualized.
Mm.
We just have to follow the steps. And then I listened to Brian Tracy and Stuart Wilde. On the way back and forth to work, I used to play these tapes over right. and over and over and over again. And I decided I was going to be an optimist, even if I had to be the fool.
Mm.
Because the optimist is not always a realist.
Mm.
But I would rather live my life from a positive perspective than be involved in suffering. The suffering you see on TV and the news.
Mm.
People wallow in it, and they immerse themselves and each other in it.
And create more of it.
Yeah, it's a self-perpetuating prophecy. So I like to do the opposite. I have a self-perpetuating prophecy of possibility thinking.
Mm-hmm.
What can we do to shift the consciousness?
Well, it's interesting because you went to exactly where I was going to go eventually, but I was going to start way back with your parents because... Your father actually had family that perished in
both of my parents.
But I mean, your father actually had wife and children, right?
Yes, yes. And he saw them killed, you know, right. during the war.
So growing up with that, because they must have carried that, no? With them, the
emotional
yes.
impact. Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And so, how do you go from that to this? Besides you making conscious decision, yoga and Reiki and all that.
Oh, okay.
How does one do
excellent
that?
Question. It's different for everybody, obviously. We all have our crosses to bear in life. And it's by overcoming those things that we grow. And people who have a relatively easy life tend not to be as developed as much depth in their life. Mm. For me, I went through a tremendous emotional catharsis in my 20s. I felt estranged from everything. I went through very deep, dark periods of depression. And I'd spend sometimes 6 months at home watching television and just wallowing in the depression. And it was hard for me to be around people because I was in so much pain. Well, after doing that for about 10 years, I made a conscious decision that I was no longer willing to live that way. Hmm. You have to really want freedom. You have to be willing to do whatever it takes. Yeah. And I became initiated in Reiki, and I used to do the head positions. Mm-hmm. Every morning, I used to do at least half an hour working on my head to balance my emotions. Mm. That was the first thing I did. Because it was so painful going through the day, being the effect of your emotions, I couldn't take it anymore. Mm. So I go, what can I do? So, like my mother, she found natural living, living in alignment with nature, with the raw foods. So I found something to balance my emotions. I also started seeing a psychic nutritionist.
Okay.
And in the mid-70s, I was spending like $250 a month on supplements. Very high-quality nutrition. And she would check me twice a month with her pendulum. And she was very good. And that balanced my brain. And I listened to these positive tapes. Mm. So, and I was a runner from high school, so I, as much as I could, I tried to maintain my exercise. So if you approach it from all the different levels, you're going to get results. Mm. But you're only as strong as your weakest link. So you have to have a total determination. And that will carry you through. I think the universe is set up in such a way that when you're trying to do something really important, it will throw up barriers.
Hmm.
And it'll say, how much do you really want this?
Wow.
Are you willing to do whatever it takes? Hmm. Do you really, really want it? That's why whatever you do in life, you better have a lot of passion, because you will be tested. You will be pushed. The universe or divine intelligence or whatever you want to call it will say, do you really want this? Are you willing to do it? Whatever is requested. And if it's not your true calling, if it's not your true passion, you're going to back down.
Mm.
But if it's something you came here to do, you will prevail.
And you're prevailing. You've got some amazing lists with some groups of people that are really active, getting together and putting on events or being part of events that are bringing awareness. So you've got one group that's sacredfriends.org, right?
Yes.
And that's what you do with you and your wife. Are you wait? Look,
I have gatherings at my home every couple months. I have a gathering. Now, in the late 80s, early 90s, I created an organization called Transformational Friends of Santa Monica.
Right.
And that came from all the pain I went through as I lifted myself up by my own bootstraps. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, you know, it's important who you associate with, but ultimately you have to do it for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
As I lifted myself up and I went back and tried to help some of my friends who were still wallowing in the dirt, I would find them pulling me back down.
Because they weren't ready.
I wasn't strong enough to overcome the negative influence.
Mm.
But I wanted to help them. So I created organizations. I had various things leading up to that. But just before the harmonic convergence in 87, I was in Teotihuacan, the Pyramid of the Sun, north of Mexico City. And I was meditating. And I got this vision, or this feeling, I'm a feeler, of creating a weekly group, weekly spiritual group, that would support people in a form of a fellowship where we could all help each other. And I came back from that, and I created Transformational Friends of Santa Monica, because that's where I lived.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned my two-bedroom apartment into a sanctuary where anybody that walked into the door would be uplifted on all levels by virtue of the fact that they were just a human being.
Mm.
And that's what we have to give to each other. And we would start the meeting. We'd have up to 40 people in my little apartment. We start the meeting in a circle with group meditation. I'd use music to relax people into the meditation. Half an hour of silence. And then coming out of the meditation, I play uplifting music. We'd go around the room and share about ourselves, whatever events, activities, whatever we did. Then we'd have a speaker, or we'd have a movie, anything that was uplifting, anything that was life positive, anything that would help to shift people. And I gave a lot of people in the community an opportunity to speak, even though they had very little experience, because I felt everybody should have a chance. And then we'd end the evening with a whole table of really healthy food. And at first it was free, then I charged like $2. And it was like a break-even thing. But people got it. I could feel there was a point in the evening where there was a shift in the room.
I'm sure they needed it.
And that community, that centered consciousness, it pervaded the whole room. And it was so exciting to feel that. It was like, yes, it's working. And then I rented a hall and did it on a larger scale for about better part of a year. And I was doing too much of it myself, and I basically got burnt out. But in the meantime, I met Pauline, who I dated for 7 years, and we just celebrated our 16-year anniversary last Saturday night on the 17th of April.
Well, happy anniversary.
Yeah, and so, you know, when you're married, things shift a little. And so I sort of cut back on that. I got into education because I realized at the age of 35, I was doing various small businesses, and I wasn't happy. It wasn't fulfilling me. So I studied Eric Erickson's 8 Stages of Life, and he said in the 5th stage of life, if you don't dedicate yourself to giving back to the community, you will stop growing spiritually. So I thought, what can I do? Teacher, of course.
And you picked one of the hardest groups of children to work with, the ones that were not inspired to learn. But let's hold that thought for a second, actually, because I want to remind everybody that you're watching Life and listening to Life Changes with Filippo. And you can learn more about us at www.lifechanges.ws. Our guest today is Samuel Kivash, and he is, thank you, he is an author, a Reiki master, a teacher, and a community synergist. And he is an author in this book called Essays on Love, Healing, and Water Transformation. And actually, let me give you a choice here, because do we talk more about the teaching or do we talk about what you wrote in this book?
A little bit of both.
Okay, go ahead.
Actually, you mentioned water transformation. Ironically,
I've seen this on your website, actually, and I wanted to get one. I got one of these from your website, actually.
Yeah. I taught for 22 years in the LA Unified School System, God bless them. And I was a little afraid to leave the job because my salary got cut in half when I went from a salary to a pension. So I looked for things that would be life positive to help me have a smoother transition. And a couple years ago, this gentleman named Ian from Canada pulled this out of his car and said, check this out. And it was love at first sight.
Okay.
I've been doing Reiki for over 30 years, and I can feel energy. And I could feel the essence of this bottle. And it only allows violet, ultraviolet, and infrared into whatever's inside of it. And it raises the frequency. And when it's used as a storage container for your superfoods, your herbs, whatever, it keeps things fresher longer. Because light is what decomposes things once they're harvested. And this blocks most of the visible light spectrum.
Wow. And I just thought it was a cool blue bottle.
Yeah.
Cool blue bottle.
So I got them. I have like 17 different sizes of bottles and jars. Yeah. And I even have a tote that you can carry your bottle. This is an insulated tote so that you don't have to worry about dropping it.
You know, I saw these on the website, and I looked. But originally, this is what I saw on the website, and I got one of these. And I wore it in your honor today.
Well, this is another interesting example. So I got into the violet flame. I coined the term violet
Thank you,
flame.
By the way.
You're welcome. and I taught in the LA Unified School System. My first real job. I subbed for 6 years, but then when I got my first real teaching job, it was sixth grade inner city. And the kids, it was math and science, and the kids were turned off, especially to math. They hated it. Mm. I thought, what can I do to inspire these kids, to get them on task? So I had a very a love of art, of color, of video, music, and I was very good at geometric constructions. And I'd been introduced to the Drumbolo material, the Flower of Life, mm-hmm. the sacred geometry material.
Yeah.
So I created. Flower of Life. Yeah. So I created original curriculum to turn the kids on, and I taught it as an elective to 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. And I taught it as a workshop for math teachers. And I reawakened their creativity. I taught up to 100 math teachers at a time at the California Math Conference.
Wow.
And for 12 years, I taught sacred geometry workshops. It was called Geometric Drawing, A Way of Life. And one of my favorite symbols in sacred geometry is the Sri Yantra. The Sri Yantra is made from the sound of Om. There's something called cymatics, which is a study of how sound vibrations create patterns. And if when you vibrate the sound of Om, which is the Maha Mantra, it's the most powerful mantra, it's the creation mantra, when you vibrate it under this glass plate in a really powerful way.
Don't tell me that's creative.
What do you mean?
Yes,
this when you vibrate it and you have sand on top of the plate, the sand will form into the
really?
Sri Yantra.
Oh, now you're going to have to make me get one of those. Okay.
I'm not going to make you do anything.
I'm going to make myself get one.
So for
That's
years,
awesome. I didn't know that.
For years, I said, I want a Sri Yantra pendant. I have a giant Sri Yantra in my office at home. It's stained glass. And I thought, I want to wear one. And I finally decided, I'm not going to stop till I find one that's really good that I love wearing. Mm-hmm. And I went on this massive search. And I finally came across this. And I bought one. I imported it from Australia. And people were stopping me in the streets and saying, where did you get that? How do I get one? Well, being that I had a natural inclination toward business, from my father raised me to do small businesses. In fact, he said, if you work for someone else, they're going to take advantage of you. Always work for yourself. Which in my case wasn't true because LA Unified was a good thing for me. I was, you know.
It was part of your path.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, being a teacher. So I said, okay, I'll import them. I'll buy them wholesale and import them. And it's just taken off like wildfire.
Yeah, and this, they have this stone behind it, right?
This is a lapis lazuli.
Okay, yeah.
They come red coral, malachite, lapis lazuli, turquoise, and black tourmaline.
You're too funny, and it's all on his website at
sacredfriends.org.
Right.
Anyways, there was a big hiatus between Transformational Friends of Santa Monica in the late 80s, early 90s, and now. And about 5 years ago, I finally caught up to the 21st century. I said, I'm going to start doing this computer stuff. So I started gathering names, just like I did back then. I had a snail mail list back then of 600 people where I'd send out bi-monthly bios of who was speaking.
That gets expensive.
Yeah. So I've been gathering email list names of people I meet at all these events I go to throughout L.A. And I have a list of about 600 people. Again, that's a magic number. Could be 6,000 maybe, but right now it's 600. And these are all people, like friends of mine, people I've met or friends of theirs. And I go through hundreds of emails sometimes till I find something that rings. Mm. Just like this Sri Yantra, it rang, it shined. My first spiritual teacher, Danielle Bloxham, said, never buy anything unless it shines out like black fire on white fire.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So
what are you looking for in those emails?
It's an event or a teacher or an article that lights me up. Mm. That I feel people have to know this. Mm. Wake up, humanity. This is something that will help them come to a higher truth, from my perspective. And so when I find something, someone that resonates like that, my nature is I have to share it. In junior high, I was in my first play, I was the town crier. Well, I'm the town crier for Los Angeles for the holistic culture creative community.
Well, you know, I didn't know that about you. I didn't know that you had such a selective process. And so now I am so honored to know, because I didn't know this from you. I knew this from people that have come up to me saying they've heard of me and Life Changes and Dorothy Donahue because you have been talking about us on your email list.
For years.
So
Dorothy, for years.
Dorothy, for years. Wow.
Reiki, she offered Reiki trainings for a very inexpensive price.
Right.
And that impressed me, because why is it that the people that need the most help have the least ability to pay? Can't afford to get the help they need. So when Dorothy came out with training at a very inexpensive price, I was behind her 100%.
Wow. And then when we started Life Changes, then people started to know about us. And I'm like, look at, where are these people coming from? And then I finally asked somebody, and she said, oh, Samuel. And that's at an event where somebody said, that's Samuel. So I came up to you, and you said, hi, Filippo. And I'm like, I don't even know you. And you're like, I know you. I've been sending you out to my mailing list. And knowing that you look for the Diamond Fire something or other, and thank you. Thank you. I'm honored, and that means a lot to me. So, wow. Okay, well, now I'm hot and emotional or something, and it feels good. You know, we started off talking about the community synergist, and it's interesting how we talked about how your life process and some of the things that you're doing now with the list and with the products, because even the products that you're choosing are really helping people.
They raise frequency.
Exactly, exactly. And so what you're doing with people as well is that you are you're helping them bring raising the frequency by bringing communities together, or bringing people into communities, or bringing awareness for certain teachers or healers or what have you. Let me ask you, why do you think that is so important? Why do you think people need to be in these communities? Why can't you just leave them alone?
Well, unfortunately, I think it's a matter of survival at this point.
Mm.
I see a lot of the major systems around me falling apart, be it the economics, finances, even the educational system. It's in shambles.
Mm.
They're not teaching things that are relevant for kids to be successful in life. And I'm really glad that I'm out of it, because there's a lot of wasted effort there.
Mm.
And we need to form communities to share and help each other through whatever comes at us. Because we might be going through some difficult times.
Mm.
And when you have people who have things to contribute to each other, it's a way to weather the storm. Living in the city, we are dependent. It's like sucking this giant tit. We are dependent on the gas, the water, the electricity.
Mm.
Any little calamity could shut one of those things down and throw us into panic.
Mm.
So what do we do? Where do we go? Who do we go with?
Mm.
I personally have been going out to Sunburst Sanctuary, 40 miles north of Santa Barbara, and there's a community out there that has a very large organic farm. They have 3,000 acres. It's a spiritual center. They meditate together. They have their own water. And I know that if things got really bad, that I could go there.
Mm.
And I would be with like-minded people in a supportive environment. We have to establish those kinds of connections. Just like my parents, I think survival is in my blood, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, but I don't live from a survival level. But if you cover your bases, then you don't have to worry so much. You should have extra food, extra water, extra, even a few extra dollars. You know, what if the banks took a little holiday?
Mm.
As long as you have resources on hand, then you can live more relaxed, more at peace.
And you're also saying in your readings and in talking to you before how people need people. We need to be touched and acknowledged by people, not by computers or not via computers or TVs, just actual people. And that's what you're helping build.
I'm very concerned about young people. Mm-hmm. Their major form of communication is texting.
Right.
What is that about?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what we've come to? Is that what we have to look forward to? writing something on a little machine mm-hmm. and communicating that way, as opposed to being together 3D, 4D, 5D, and really sharing, you know, our essence.
By the way, texting is not like this. It's more like this. You're not texting. That's the problem. So
I have
you don't
never,
know how wonderful it is.
I have never texted. I've never texted in my life. Am I missing out?
No, actually, if you have the real thing, like we've been having here, that's where it is.
By the way, I have a cell phone, but it is prepay, and I only use it for emergency.
I understand.
I don't want to pay $40, $50, $60 a month and be on the phone all the time to justify all the money I'm spending for my cell phone.
When you can be face-to-face, and that's what you're doing. You're out there in the communities, and that's why you are what you are. And I know that you have something that you want to share that will help encapsulate so much of this. And it's actually, I know what you're going to read, and it's a lot of who you are. So this is great. I'm glad you're going to share this.
I was blessed this morning. It happens all the time. People send me the best stuff. Well, a friend of mine named Constance has a friend of a friend in England who wrote this, and she didn't even give me the name of the person. It's called Vision, and it says it all better than I could. And it goes like this. I have a vision where all people are at peace, fed, and housed. Every child is loved and educated to develop their talents, where the heart is more important than the head. I need to work on that one. I'm very much in my head. And wisdom is revered over riches. In this world, justice, equality, and fairness rule. Nature is honored, so the waters flow pure and clear, and the air is fresh and clean. Plants and trees are nurtured, and all animals are respected and treated with kindness. Happiness and laughter prevail, and humans walk hand in hand with angels. Thank you for the love, understanding, wisdom, courage, and humility to do my part to spread the light. May all the world ascend. So be it.
So be it. Wow. That is said beautifully and concisely, but I have to say, Samuel, you have said some very beautiful things throughout this whole...
You brought it out of me.
Oh, Samuel. Yeah, you're going to make me emotional again.
Good.
come here.
Oh, man. My father taught me about bear hugging.
Well, you're a great bear hugger. You're a great community builder, and we're so happy that you're part of this community. And what you're doing for Los Angeles, I hope and trust that there are people all over the world doing this in their communities. And we're happy to have had you here as an example for other people to hear and say, wait a minute, I could do that. I could bring people together, and maybe someday they'll be calling you or writing you as they are now saying, how do we do this where we are, and that your community can build as you help build a world community. So more power to what you're doing and who you are in this life.
We all serve as models for each other.
Absolutely.
We all learn and grow together.
Absolutely.
That's community.
And here we are.
And there you go.
And so be it. This has been so special. We've been talking to Samuel Kivash. Again, the book is Essays on Love, Healing and Water Transformation, and you can learn more about the book and more importantly about Samuel and his products, actually.
My chapter is called Building Conscious Communities, One Home at a Time.
One home at a
time. Turn your home into a sanctuary. Open it up to the community. Get to know your neighbors. Invite your friends. Invite the stranger. There is no stranger. We are all one.
Aren't we inspired yet? So sacredfriends.org, go to it, learn more about it, and do the same for all the loved ones in your life or the new-to-be loved ones.
Amen.
Thank you, Samuel. Well, with that, we go from yet one passionate being to another passionate being, and this one is Dorothy Lee Donahue, who will be also helping us be the change we wish to see in the world.
Wow. So there is this one beautiful message flowing all over the world through emails, newsletters, and advertising. And it seems that everyone, including Life Changes, is using Gandhi's quote, "We must become the change we wish to see in the world." For a little over a year now, I've been making suggestions as to how we can become conscious co-creators instead of the unconscious ones, in the hope that all of our listeners will do their very best to become this much-talked-about change that is sorely needed in the world. When people come to have a private session with me, I send out a questionnaire that asks this one special thing. If you could change one thing in the world, what would that be? Inevitably, they answered that they would stop all wars and bring peace to the planet. And then when we talk about it, they tell me the job is just too big and they don't know where to begin. Years ago, Albert Einstein said this when asked how to create world peace. Nothing that I can do will change the structure of the universe, but maybe by raising my voice I can help the greatest of all causes, goodwill among men and peace on earth. In 2008, Americans raised their voices and voted for change. They voted for Mr. Obama. And I believe they voted for him because he promised transparency. After about a year and a half in office, many are crying out that they are not getting what they voted for. However, more and more voices are being raised, and not only in America, but all over the world. Change is happening. And as we all know, change is inevitable. But progress is always optional. A brilliant young writer, Grant Russick, submitted these thoughts about being the change in an essay he wrote in 2008. His paper was about Roosevelt's New Deal, and it makes a truly great point. He says, Americans need to take responsibility for the maintenance of our government and communities. Although important, voting is not enough, politicians can affect legislative change, but without the active participation of the American people, special interests and political compromise will always get in the way of pure considerations of the public good. The mere act of paying attention is a major step in the right direction. Real change cannot come from the top down alone. It must rise up from the bottom as well. If we are to make real change in our nation, the American people must be enlisted in that effort. A new progressive notion of citizenship must include a renewed emphasis on volunteerism and community service. Quite simply, FDR passed the New Deal, but it took the hard work of the American people for his vision to become reality. Accordingly, only by becoming actively involved in the functioning of our government and communities, it is possible to make the change that we wish to see become a reality. Thank you, Mr. Russick. Simply put, being conscious and aware is the first step in being the change. We must look within our lives and see where we are in conflict. We could be in conflict with our families, our loved ones, our coworkers, our teachers, our neighbors, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker. People go through reaction shifts, and hopefully before they pass on, they learn to relate and have relationships. So this is where peace must begin. Love and forgive yourself and everyone you know. Live from your heart and remember that we are truly all one. So if you love me, you're loving yourself. If you love the Russians, you're loving yourself. If you love the Chinese, you're loving yourself. We are all one. And before we can expect to co-create world peace, we must become peaceful within. An old Chinese proverb supports this thought. If there is light in the soul, there will be beauty in the person. If there's beauty in the person, there will be harmony in the house. If there is harmony in the house, there will be order in the nation. If there is order in the nation, there will be peace in the world. So the solution is relatively simple. Let each of us work on our stuff and become the peace we want to see in the world. Let us pay attention and raise our voices together in love and bring peace to earth. The time is now. Until next week, please remember that you are the power in your world. You're the guru you've been looking and waiting for. You're the only one who can end your suffering. And you can only do this by beginning a love affair with yourself. Choose to become a very conscious co-creator by making elegant choices. And never forget that you are powerful beyond measure, and that you are love, you are lovable, and you are loved.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I like it all. Thank you so much, Dorothy Lee, for the Be the Change segment. How's that for a title? We're looking for a title for that segment. If you have something to offer, and email us, write us, send us a telegram. No, nobody does that anymore. How about connecting with us on Facebook and sending us a video on YouTube, a video replay on YouTube, or calling us, emailing us, whatever it is. We love hearing from you. We love the fact that we are here coming to you at the moment once a week on air and then on video, and that we are constantly together. We feel like we're one because we hear from you and you hear from us, and you're sharing with us the kind of guests you'd like to hear and see, and we're asking you for your opinions because this is our show collectively, and life changes with us as we live, as we grow, as we do the show. So with that, I'd like to thank once again our guest, Samuel Kivash. And again, you can learn more about him at sacredfriends.org. And of course, always at our website at lifechanges.ws for all of our guests. And we do have a guest next week, and I look forward to finding out who that is, because at the moment I don't know, because we had a schedule conflict. But it's going to all work out. And remember, keep the conversation going. That's the most important part. And to patronize our sponsors, if you would. We've got all kinds of sponsors on the front page of our website. You can also learn about them on the sponsor page. But I'd like to mention three really special ones: Ion Ways Water Systems, and Love and Miracles, and of course, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and Buzz Bros, who brings to you our wonderful videos on YouTube. So with that, I want to remind you all that I am Filippo Voltaggio, and sometimes I need reminding myself. And it's been happy being a pleasure. It has. It really has. And I'm being of service by hosting Life Changes with Filippo today. I, along with our segment hosts and producers, Dorothy Lee Donahue and Mark Lejeure, and our engineer, Seth, thank you for joining us and in being part of this show and being part of this world and being part of the change we all wish to see in this world. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to Life Changes. Join us here every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and visit us on the web at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. And follow our community on Facebook at Life Changes with Filippo. Join us here next week as we consciously embrace and explore the only constant, life changes.